Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Around Town. I'm your host, Ron Giordano. As you know, our goal is to bring you interesting topics and guests for you each and every show. We have a special show guest today, Kate Webster. She's the Education Outreach Coordinator for the Child Advocacy Center of McHenry County. And you're listening to 101.5 FM, your Huntley Community Radio Station. Welcome, Kate, and tell us all about your work and what's going on at the center.
Thank you so much for having us. I think since the last time I was here, we moved center from Woodstock to Crystal Lake. And it actually was a blessing in disguise. We got kicked out of our Woodstock location because they tore down the building. And so we were a little stressed out about that. But we found an awesome location in Crystal Lake. And we had an awesome person purchase the building that we get to rent from them. So that was a huge blessing for that. And we've been really busy. I don't know if that's good or bad, but we're really busy all the time over there. I don't know. Some people don't really know like what the CAC does, so I can kind of go into that if you want me to.
If you would, so people understand what the CAC does and basic information about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that I didn't even know the CAC existed. I used to teach here in Huntley in elementary school, and I didn't even know that the Child Advocacy Center existed. So getting out there and telling people what we do, where we are, I think is important. So what we do is we will speak to children that are suspected of being abused. Our mission is to reduce trauma or secondary trauma to child victims of abuse. So we coordinate a timely response with our multidisciplinary team, and I kind of go into who we work with there, to reported cases of child sexual abuse and physical abuse. What sets us apart from other CACs kind of in the area is we will speak to any child about pretty much anything. So some other CACs will only talk about sexual abuse. Of course, we'll talk to them about sexual abuse, but we also will talk to them about physical abuse, if they were witness to a crime, if domestic violence occurred in the home and they saw that. We've had, unfortunately, some shootings lately in McHenry County within homes, and so children were present for that. We'll speak to them. It's very interesting what a child remembers with their senses when a traumatic event happens. Sometimes a child will only remember the sounds that they hear, and so that can be very beneficial and helpful when we know maybe, you know, someone shot six rounds and a child could say, I heard about six loud sounds, and so that can be very helpful, you know, for the police investigation. So we will speak to a child up until right before they turn 18. We've had children come in like the week that they are about to turn 18. Once they turn 18, then they would go to the police department to, you know, disclose their information. But if they're younger than 18, and as long as they're verbal and they can be understood, which is typically around 3 years old, sometimes a little younger, sometimes a little older, we will speak to them.
I'm sure, Kate, some of the older children will be a little reluctant to, you know, open up. So how do you get them to open up and tell their story?
We have fantastic forensic interviewers is what we call them. So the people that speak to the children, they are called forensic interviewers. They go through extensive training to do exactly that, figure out how to get these children to open up, how to have the children tell their story in their own words, because that's really what this interview is about. It's not led by the adult. It's facilitated by the adult, where a child really it's their opportunity to tell their story and about their abuse in their own words. So, yeah, sometimes children are hesitant, regardless of the age, and our forensic interviewers are just really honest with them. You know, if they ask questions, they answer. If the children ask questions for a better understanding of, like, why they're there and all of that, the forensic interviewers will give as much information as they can to the child. The forensic interviewers give a decent amount of, you know, time for the child to ask questions too about the process and, you know, anything that they want to know. And so they have techniques and trainings and things that they've gone through to try to get a child to engage. But ultimately, if a child is not ready to disclose and a child is not ready to tell their story, no one can force them to. We certainly aren't going to force them to. And I believe our interviewer often leaves it open-ended in those situations. Like, if you ever change your mind and you want to come back and talk to me, I'm always available here.
So the frequency of those interviews, would that be dependent upon the child? Could it be like every other day or once a week, or how does that work?
The hope is that the child only is interviewed once. So it is audio and video recorded, and we work with our MDT. So that's our multidisciplinary team, DCFS, law enforcement, state's attorney's office, medical and mental health professionals. And the first three of those, state's attorney, law enforcement, and DCFS, when warranted, will be at the interview as well. But in the room, it's just the interviewer and the child. And so the hope is that it's to reduce the amount of times a child has to tell their story about abuse. And so it should happen one time. But there are times that sometimes a child comes back more than once because the child wants to. But we have to be really careful about the amount of times a child comes in, because we never want it to discredit the child. We never want that to confuse the child. The interviews are used in court, not to replace a child's testimony, but if there's criminal charges, that interview could be played in court. And if you have a child come in multiple times, then it could discredit that child and unfortunately help the alleged offender to, you know, say that the child's not telling the truth or something. So the hope is only one interview.
So when that child is interviewed and you find out that's something very serious and the authorities are notified of this serious allegation, how does that work where the child then doesn't feel somewhat reluctant to face that person again in the same, let's say it's in their household? How's that child protected?
Well, so thankfully, when we have those interviews, law enforcement is in the separate room listening to it live, as well as the state's attorney. So there are times that a child discloses something during the interview, and the state's attorney approves charges immediately and tells law enforcement, you can go pick up the person. I've got these charges approved. So sometimes that person is arrested immediately, which we would call the alleged offender. If it doesn't happen immediately, or even sometimes if it does, that's where DCFS and law enforcement work together to put in some type of a safety plan or something to make sure that that child is going to be safe. Sometimes that means that a child is entering into foster care directly from the CAC if neither parent or person in the household is safe for them to return to. Sometimes it would be, let's say it's a parent, one of the parents being kicked out, and the other parent ensuring that they can keep the child safe, getting orders of protection. And so we have an advocate at the CAC, and that's a huge part of her job, is she will work with these parents the entire duration of the case. And sometimes that's 3 years that we're with these families if there's criminal charges. And that's what our advocate does. She helps them get orders of protection. She calls them after every court date. She checks in with them constantly, just asking if there's anything that they need, how things are doing, getting them set up with therapy services. So they come to the CAC for the interview, but then they're not done with us. We stand with them and we support them through it all.
Right. And I understand you're looking for a therapist too, correct?
We are, yes. So now that we moved locations, we have the opportunity to have an in-house therapist. So if anyone listening to this would be interested in more information or possibly becoming our therapist, we would love that. We'll send them to a specific trauma-informed training to get the information that they need. It's really flexible hours. It's like 16 to 20 hours a week, and you kind of can choose your own hours as long as it's when a child is out. If a therapist wants to work on the weekends, they can come in and work on the weekends, open up the center. But we really want to be able to offer those therapy services for free to the families that come through the CAC.
So Kate, that therapist, do they have to have a specific background in training, or do you train them, or how does that work?
Both. So they do have to have specific trainings. I'm not exactly sure what the letters behind their names are, but our director for sure knows that. And so at this point, I think that we are interested in anyone that thinks that they may be qualified to do it, to send their resumes over to us, email us, Facebook message us, get a hold of us in any way. And that would be something that our director and our operations manager could look through their qualifications and see if that's something they can work with. And then I do believe that there's a specific training that they would be sent to as well, to be trauma-informed, because obviously our children come through with a lot of trauma, significant trauma. And so it's really important that they have therapy after they come to the CAC, because the forensic interview is not a therapy session. And so they do need to have therapy after that. And so we want to be able to offer that for free to the families, of course, that, you know, can't afford it otherwise.
So when you do this, then how do you fund bring a new therapist on? I mean, what generates your cash flow?
So we are solely relied and funded on grant funded and donations. And unfortunately, the grant money is going down while our numbers and our production costs are going up. Production is kind of a silly word, but operating maybe is a better word. Our operating costs are going up. And so at the state level, CACI, the Child Advocacy Centers of Illinois, they are working with legislation. They're working with legislation to, you know, try to get more funding for the CACs. But as we all know, things with the state, it works really slowly. And so while that interim is, you know, we're looking at this point for more monetary donations, we need some big funders, honestly, to keep doing the work that we're doing. We're not going to close our doors. You know, the work that we do is important. We're not going to close our doors, but it does impact the amount, you know, that we can do. During COVID, we never closed. We never shut down. We were considered the essential workers, and our numbers really didn't slow down that much either.
What type of a budget do you currently have or that your target to be for the future, Kate?
As far as specific numbers, that would be something my director would know. I'm not totally sure on our specific numbers. What I can say is that each interview or cost per child that comes through the CAC to be interviewed, the average cost is $2,902 for the services that that child and family would receive, each individual child. And that, again, you know, since we've moved buildings from Woodstock to Crystal Lake, so that's almost exactly a year. We just celebrated our one-year anniversary. We've had 458 interviews come through our doors.
Wow.
From last November to this November. And then you figure each child, that's $2,900, the operating costs. And it's no cost to the families. Every service that we offer is completely free to the families, to law enforcement, to DCFS, everyone that we work with. Everything is free. So that's why it's really important, the money that we receive from grants and donations. You know, it's vital. It goes directly back into the families.
Well, do you have any fun drives coming up?
So we have November 29th is Giving Tuesday, which is kind of a fun thing. We just had our 1 year anniversary. And so we are always accepting donations. We have a PayPal link. And we put that on our Facebook the 9th, November 9th. We put that on our Facebook November 9th, and it has our PayPal link. And November 29th is Giving Tuesday, which, you know, people like to give then. We have a big fundraiser that we'll be doing usually in the spring. So we have some fundraisers coming up. Nothing that I have solid dates to share on yet, but a couple coming in late winter, early spring as well.
Just take a pause for a minute to remind everybody you're on 101.5 FM WHRULP, your Huntley Community Radio Station. We're talking to Kate Webster from the Education Outreach Coordinator for the Child Advocacy Center of McHenry County. Kate, the November 29th fundraiser that you're talking about, is there a goal set for that you'd like to attain?
You know, we haven't put a set number for that. We would just like to see so many people engage is really what it is. And so to help us, you know, get our name out there more, we're trying to offer a bunch of free trainings and outreach to the community so that people, you know, one, know that we exist, and two, can receive training from us. And once they do that, I think that people realize, maybe I'll give some money to that. And so what we're trying to show people is, you know, no donation is too small. If somebody wants to give, you know, maybe they set it up. I think we have one donor that from every paycheck that they have, they give a certain amount. It's just set up on their PayPal automatically to come out. And so we get that. So to answer your question, there's no set amount because we're so thankful for anything that we receive. But really when it comes down to it, from what some other CACs that we've seen, you know, in the area and in Illinois, some of them have these like really large funders where they have a decent amount of money. You know, sometimes they build them a new building, which we don't need. We just did the building, obviously. But we need to be able to keep our operation costs going. And so any amount, big or small, is well received by us.
Well, the 29th, is that going to be just a date that you have targeted, or will it be something being going on? Or
it'll just be virtual. We'll put it on our Facebook. Giving Tuesday is like a nationwide event, I think, that people do. It's right around Thanksgiving. I think that's around, you know, Black Friday and the small shop Saturday. And so it's kind of the same idea. People are, you know, spending money on shopping. And so it's a nationwide thing on giving. It's called Giving Tuesday, to say, like, okay, you bought all this stuff. Now you can give too, you know, right before the holidays.
Right.
So I think that's kind of the idea behind it. We'll definitely have it on our social media to promote it. You know, if people, especially around the holidays, people want to give. People are really generous. And so we'll, you know, post that then, like, hey, don't forget about us. We'd love to receive your donations as well.
Have you investigated folks with their trust and wills that they think about donating to your organization?
Yeah, I think that our director, Misty, goes to all sorts of meetings with that, different things like with the Community Foundation. She's hooked up with lots of people like that. But if people have suggestions, too, that they want to send to us of things that maybe have worked for their nonprofits, or, you know, things maybe someone knows, like, hey, I know this person, and they've just been looking for a place to give their money, we will certainly talk to them as well. because, you know, sometimes, like, you don't know what you don't know. And so I think that's kind of what the Community Foundation works on some as well, you know, kind of hooking up donors to certain agencies to hook them up to see if they match what, you know, aligns with what where they want to give their money.
Well, you know, it's obvious that you've got your heart and soul into this, Kate. And the I know for the listeners out there, you too have participated because you've got some children that you've fostered and adopted, correct?
Yes, correct. I always joke that I have 17 kids, but the reality is I only have six. so yeah, this has always been my passion to work with children, but especially children that, you know, maybe have been through trauma or some hard experiences, and their families, to come alongside their families. So I can't really escape it. I have it professionally and personally within my home because I do have foster children, adoptive children, biological children.
You do realize that some ladies out there, some women are saying, my goodness, she's got six, I've got two, and I got a handful.
Yeah, you know what? No matter the amount, they all can be handfuls. I tell people that my expectations have just lowered, I think. I think that what I expect of my kids and my family and my house, they're just like more non-existent. I think our hardest transition was from one to two kids, to be honest. After three kids, it's all the same. I don't know. They all kind of just help each other, and, you know.
Well, it's that's just awesome. That is awesome. How about upcoming free training at MCC?
Yes. So on November 14th, we are offering a free training. It is for anyone that interacts with kids, families, teachers, anyone that interacts with children, which is most of us. We're all around children at some point. And it'll be from 5:30 to 7:30 at McHenry County College. We partnered up with some other local agencies. There's going to be free giveaways that they're offering. It's going to be a fun event, an informational event. It will be bilingual, so it'll be in both English and Spanish for anyone that wants to come. We're hoping to have a good turnout. We're hoping that it's just, you know, a good conversation. We're going to have time for people to be able to ask questions specifically about anything that they're interested to.
And what is that date again, Kate?
It's November 14th from 5:30 to 7:30 at McHenry County College. We are calling it How to Keep Your Child Safe Training. We are hoping we're going to touch on all sorts of things, but we're going to talk about grooming, child sex trafficking, technology and social media safety, and how to handle a disclosure of abuse. What are you going to do if your child comes to you and tells you something, you know, is happening to them, whether it's at school or at home? What's the best practice to do? And then also just letting parents and teachers and whoever decides to come, let them know about the process. What happens after a child discloses, right? Because that can be an overwhelming feeling. You're about to meet a lot of people. As a teacher, I would have wanted to know, like, what was happening to my students after I called the DCFS hotline. Because you, those are your babies. Those are your kids, right? Like, you feel very protective sure. over them. And so just telling everyone, all the adults, like, here's what happens. Here's the process. Here's what's going to happen when a child comes to the CAC. Here's who you might meet. Here's what the child can expect. Here's what the family can expect. Taking away some of that mystery and some of that scariness, hopefully, from that.
Do you think that's hard for the mom to make that phone call? Being concerned, you know, is this real or is it, am I imagining things? I mean, it must be very difficult.
Yeah, I would say it's probably very difficult, especially because I don't know if I mentioned this, but the only way that we will speak to a child is it has to be referred by DCFS and or law enforcement. So as a parent, we do have parents call the CAC and say, hey, I think you need to talk to my kid. I think they're being abused. And then we'll right away say, okay, well, you need to go file either a police report and or call the DCFS hotline. So immediately when you're involving those two agencies from a parent standpoint, that's automatically kind of scary and intimidating because you don't know. It's in their hands now of where that's going to turn. And so that's scary because especially if it's someone that's abusing the child in the home, whether that be a sibling or a parent or, you know, someone that they're close with, that's overwhelming. And so that's where we do come through, you know, side by side. The advocate helps walk them through the entire process of that. Here's the names. Here's the numbers of people that you're going to interact with. So, yeah, I think it's very scary. I think it's brave of the person reporting it and super brave of the child telling that adult and taking that first step to tell them. And so we're hoping to take some of that mystery out of it for them.
So that first step basically would be them making that phone call to you, correct?
The first step would be for a child to disclose to an adult and then that adult reporting it to DCFS and or law enforcement. Then we receive a phone call from DCFS or law enforcement. Once we receive a report from them, whether it's a police report or DCFS report, then we will contact the families after they've been told that it was taken as a report. Then we'll contact the families to set up the interview. We'll contact law enforcement. We'll contact DCFS and the state's attorney's office. The CAC will get everyone together that needs to be there for that child to be interviewed. And sometimes that process can take a matter of like an hour, really quick, if it's an emergency and that child should not be going home or whatever it may be. We'll get them in super fast. If there's no immediate risk to that child, because sometimes children decide to disclose years after the fact, which that's okay too, then that's not an immediate risk often because, you know, maybe something happened when they were on vacation from a stranger or whatnot. If it's not an immediate risk, then we'll just schedule it when it works best for everyone's schedule. But usually still within a couple days to a week at the most is what we hope to do. But there are times that we'll get calls and it's the school, you know, the child's at school and it's not safe for them to return home, and we will hustle and get everyone to the CAC within 30 minutes to an hour.
So other situation would be where that would be where the mom would bring the mother, would bring the child over to your organization?
If it's an emergency, sometimes the parents will. If the parents are the alleged offenders, then law enforcement would bring the child to the CAC or DCFS would bring them to the CAC. We do not allow any alleged offenders on the CAC property. So let's say that mom is the alleged offender and dad is being supportive of the children. Dad could bring the children to the CAC. Mom would not be allowed on the property at all. Sometimes a child will disclose when they're in their interview that maybe we thought dad was supportive and dad actually also has done something and dad's sitting in the waiting room. Then law enforcement will escort dad out while the child is still in their interview, because it's really important. The most important thing is that that child feels safe. You know, they're telling something that's probably the most awful thing that's ever happened to them. And we want them to feel safe and protected at the CAC and not like they have to, you know, protect the adult that's in the waiting room.
I'm sure there's probably no story that's not a surprise to you when you hear what's going on, is there?
No. We have a lot of different stories that come in, but what surprises me continually is how resilient these kids and how brave these kids are that come in. Some of the most, not just bravest children I met, but some of the bravest people that I have ever met have been children that have come through the Child Advocacy Center and just how strong they are, knowing the amount of abuse that they have endured and just how strong they are is nothing short of amazing. And I don't know how they do it, but I want to be more like them because they are absolutely inspiring with how they just can continue to live life and grow and heal from the abuse that occurred to them. And that's what we want to get out. And that's what our training is about too, is, you know, we hope that the more people that are educated on this, mm-hmm. maybe that will impact to make it the less amount of children that are abused or the less amount of children that feel that they have to hide, you know, their abuse or protect their abuser. Our hope is that the more children that the more adults that are engaged and informed and educated will keep our children safe.
Well, there you have it, everybody. The a true story from Kate Webster and what's going on and how they can help people that are out there and help your families. You've been listening to the Huntley Community Radio Station, 101.5 FM, WHRULP. We thank you for joining us today, and go to huntleycommunityradio.com, click on Contact Us if you have any other questions. We want to thank Kate Webster for being here and telling her story. Thanks, folks. Have a great day.